So we are in the 15th chapter, and since we had the winter break, I thought I will summarize, because we have covered 5 verses so far. In the 15th chapter has a lot of significance in the Bhagavad Gita, because it is the very clearest definition of the reality, the Brahman, the consciousness, that is very hard to describe in words, because it is a state that is beyond words. But in the 15th chapter, the teacher, the Lord himself, has made a very, very beautiful attempt to define this, who is this Lord, this Brahman, this higher state of consciousness, as clearly as can be expressed in human words. The poetry in this is very beautiful, and also it is very artistic. It is a very descriptive chapter. Not only that, but it also gives us steps to reach that reality, and also what it should be the goal of life, and ultimately ends with a complete description of what is the conditioned and the unconditioned consciousness and the world and what is the relationship. So everything is covered in these 20 verses. It's a very, very powerful chapter. It was Swami Chinmayananda's favorite chapter. And everybody who is a regular in Chinmaya Mission is supposed to memorize this chapter. That is understood. Because every time you go to PRC or any kind of retreats, before lunch and dinner, they chant the entire 15th chapter before they eat. So those who have been going regularly end up memorizing. This was the first one I had memorized, and then of course a few others. So in the 15th chapter, it's called the Purushottam Yoga, the Yoga of the Supreme Self, the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Spirit. And it starts with a description of how this world came into being, or what was the source of this world. And in the first verse it says, Urdhva Moolam Adhashakam Ashvattham Prahuravyayam Chandamsi Yasya Parnani Yastam Vedas Vedavit. So the world is an upside down tree. And normally we know that a tree has the roots in the bottom and the branches above and the leaves are above. But here the world is said to be an upside down tree, where the source is above, and that is the Lord. As we know, he is the source of the whole universe, the roots. So the creation emerged from him. But why is he said to be above? God is everywhere. So why do we say above? Because above means something that is higher. Like we say high command, you know, like if a salesman needs to make a sale and the customer wants a lower price, he has to say, I have to check with my higher ups, I have to check with my boss. The boss may be working on the ground floor, and the salesman may be on the third floor. But even though he's below, he's higher as far as hierarchy in the company, the manager or the CEO. So similarly, the Lord is considered higher because he's higher than us. That's why whenever you say, thank you, God, you always look up. Not that he's not here or there, but he's higher. So the roots are higher and the world is below and the branches are spread out, and this whole earth is described as a tree. Why is it described as a tree? Many reasons. We have covered that before. One of them is that it spreads and multiplies. The tree spreads and then new branches come out and new leaves come out. And especially the Ashwatha tree, the ficus religiosa, which is tree which actually spreads for miles. There's one in the Calcutta Botanical Garden which spreads for, I think, 1.5 miles. It's about 700 years old. So it is considered to be avyayam. It is considered to be long-lasting. And then also the tree also they use, which we will talk later on, is that it can be cut down. Just as a tree can be cut down, so similarly this world, we can free ourselves from this bondage of this world, which he covers in the third verse. So he says the Vedas are its leaves. So the branches are all of us, and the Vedas are the leaves. Because the leaves are the ones that nourish the tree. Even though the tree nourishes the leaves, but the leaves in turn nourish the tree. Because if you chop the leaves off the tree will die, because the leaves make chlorophyll and they pull the nutrients up. So here the Vedas are considered the tree, which means the knowledge. Any society to survive has to have knowledge. without knowledge, you know, we could not have all the scientific progress and so on. So the Vedas are the leaves, and one who knows this is said to have the right knowledge. And then in the second verse, the Lord continues that these branches are spread out. And as we know, in the Ashwatha tree, what happens is the branches spread out. And as they go further apart, the original root cannot sustain that tree. So what does the tree do? From the branches, it sends further roots down. And the roots go down and they again take root. So there's multiple roots and it spreads for miles and miles. And we don't, after a while, you don't even know where the original root was, because there are so many, you know, trunks and roots all over. And the tree just keeps on spreading, because obviously the one root cannot sustain a tree which the branches are half a mile away or something. So similarly, we also in our life get bound by our vasanas. We go down and we take firm root. And because of our vasanas, our selfish desires, we get so attached to the world that it becomes very difficult. And people say, oh, I'm so caught up in my work, you know, I can't get away, or I'm so caught up in my family, you know, I wish I could come to the Gita class, but you know how busy I am, I have so much work, or my family takes importance, or and I cannot get away from work. Swamiji is here, but you know how busy I am. So we get caught with our own desires, our own vasanas. And then he says, adas chordvam prasrita. So the leaves and the branches go up and down in a tree. Not all the branches go up, but some of them go this way and go down. What it means is that in our life also, some people go upward and some people go downward. Some people evolve, some people go downhill, doing, you know, negative deeds and all that. So that's how karmanu bandhini manushya loke, in this world people get bound. Then in the third verse, the Lord says, na rupam asyeha tatho palabhyate nanto na chadir na cha sampratishta. So what is the nature of this world? None of us can adequately describe, you know, where does the world begin, where does it end, where does space end. Even scientists don't know. It goes on and on and on for trillions of miles. Not only space, but also in time. When did the universe start? They say, well, at the Big Bang. But then science says that, there was universe even before. Vedas tell us that there were multiple universes, and then they came, and then they perished, and then again the, you know, universe started again. So neither in time nor in space anybody can know this world. What to talk about knowing the reality, which is even beyond this world, bigger than this world. And also, na sampratishta, how is this universe maintained? How is the earth standing just in the middle of space and rotating and maintaining all the weathers and temperature, keeping exact distance from the sun? What is the power? You say gravity, but you know, I mean, what is gravity? How does the Halley's Comet travel for trillions of miles and every 86 years comes back? Who maintains all that? It's really mind-boggling. But it says that still this world has so much fascination for us that we get so attached. He says, asanga shastrena dridena chitva, with the firm acts of detachment, cut this world. Cut this world does not mean you destroy the world, or does not mean that you have nothing to do with the world. But lose your dependence on this world for your joy. And what do you do? Tatav padam tat parimargitavyam. And pick up that Lord, that goal that is higher. Yasmin gata na nivartanti bhuya. Once you get on the spiritual path, because what happens is that you say, I'm going to detach from the world. Okay. But then I need something to attach to. I need something to hold on to. The mind needs something to love. So, okay, I stop loving my jewelry, my saris, I don't spend too much time on that. So where do I turn my attention? They say, transfer your love to the Lord. Transfer your attention to the Lord. Tameva chadyam purusham prapadye. And worship, approach that Adi Purush, the original of the creator of this whole universe, yatav pravritti prasrita purani, from whom this old tradition, the whole prakriti has come. So the idea here in the third and fourth verse is that slowly detach from the world and attach to the higher. That's what Gurudev says, detach and attach. Detach from the lower and attach to the higher. And it's very interesting, you know, the new year is here. So we were at a small gathering, you know, somebody had invited us. There were only four or five families. It wasn't a big party. And they said, just come over, have dinner, and then you can watch them. And so I just there were about 20 minutes to New Year. So I just asked the people around, what is your resolution for this new year? And, you know, people had a variety. Somebody said, I want to get more fit. I want to walk more. Somebody said, I want to develop six-pack abs. That was his goal for the... I said, that's all your goal? Yeah, that was his goal. He said, yeah, I want... Okay. Somebody said, I want to get more organized. I want to organize my paperwork. And somebody said, I want to, you know, do more work. You know, do more work for the environment. I mean, there were good goals also. Do more work for the environment. Somebody said, I want to start new projects in India to help people. Somebody said, I want to read better books, you know, like audio books, you know, the fiction, nonfiction. And it was interesting. In that room, not one person said, I want to grow spiritually. And I was shocked, really, because, see, we associate so much, you know, in the Chinmaya mission, most of our socialization is with here and with Swamiji's, and even on our trips we go. And we naturally assume that that is the goal of life. And majority of the people don't think that. Even, I don't know how many of you here thought that what am I going to do in this new year? Yeah, of course, one has to be healthy and fit and get organized. But the most important goal, how many of us do that? That in this year, let me get closer to the truth. Let me get closer to God. Let me evolve spiritually. Ultimately, that is the only goal. That is the only goal. Everything else is secondary. And each one of us should, in our couple of minutes, maybe I can give you a couple of minutes, each one should think that how am I going to grow spiritually? Maybe let us take a couple of minutes. And what practical steps am I going to do in this year 2015? Because that is ultimately the only thing. Everything else is secondary. Yeah, you need work, you need money, you need family, but everything else should lead to that spiritual goal. Somebody said very beautifully, he said, if you face the wall and you turn your back to the world, all you see is the wall. Then the world has less effect on you. And so that's what they say, turn your mind towards the Lord and turn your back towards the world. But they say, but you cannot keep your back to the wall all the time. You have to turn around and face the world. So they say, okay, when you have to turn around and face the world, see the Lord everywhere. See the Lord in all the beings, all the animals, the birds, the plants, the fish, every human, in the chair, everywhere you see him. And so constantly to keep your mind in that. What are the practical steps I'm going to take? Not only to evolve spiritually, but to become a better human being, to share with others, give more, help, serve, make this world a better place, because that is part of spiritual growth. I cannot grow just in a vacuum. When I grow spiritually and when I help others, when I do things unselfishly, then my mind is filled with love, and such a mind the Lord comes in much easier, which we'll talk about in this verse, about talking about the mind in the verse number 7. So that was, the Lord said, that is your goal, detach from the world and attach to the higher. And then he said in the verse number 5, it is a very, very practical verse, which I think Pankaj did just before the holidays, where he said that what are the qualities of a spiritual seeker? What should he do or she do? So he says, nirmana moha, so free yourself from pride. Pride, arrogance, because pride or arrogance increases the ego and takes you further away from the truth, from God. And moha, moha is the delusion. So give up pride and give up delusion, the wrong knowledge, and get the right knowledge from the guru, from the scriptures. And jita sangha dosha, and conquer your attachments. The dosha means the falsehood, the sin, or the wrong idea of attachments. So give up your attachments and constantly remember my goal, and that is spirituality, that is Om, that is the Lord within. Not only remember that goal, but bring it into your life. Start living like a divine being, you know, helping others, serving the world. showing more love and compassion, and vinivritta kama, and completely give up desires, selfish desires, give it up. Your only desire should be for spiritual growth. My only desire should be to serve the world. But my selfish desires should be completely given up. Does not mean that you don't work or you don't accumulate, but my main purpose in life is to serve the world. Dvandvair vimukta sukha dukha sangyaihi. And our life is always full of the pairs of opposites, heat and cold, joy and sorrow, success and failure. So what we do is we run towards joy, run away from sorrow, we want this, and you know, so we are all the time chasing and running. And in that process, you never get completely what you want, and then you never can get yourself free from. So just realize that there will be pairs of opposites. Sometimes there will be joy, sometimes sorrow, sometimes success, sometimes failure, sometimes heat, sometimes cold. Just accept them as they are. Do your best and do not get too caught up in that. Because what's going to happen is one day there will be joy, you will be up, and then sorrow, you will be down, and up and down. Your mind is all the time stressed and agitated. So keep your mind calm and balanced. So this is what we had covered in the first five verses. So today we'll start verse number 6, because Krishna sees that Arjuna still needs, and we still need, more explanation of what is this reality. Who is this Brahman, this God, this Paramatma, this Purushottam, and where does Krishna live? So he says in the verse number 6, we'll do today. Natad bhasayate suryah. Na shashanko na pavakah. Yad gatvana nivartante. Tad dham paramam mama. So my param dham, you know, the supreme abode, the Krishna says, when Krishna says I, he does not only mean I, that the beautiful blue boy of Vrindavan, but when he says I, he means I, that supreme reality. So where is my supreme abode? Tad dham paramam, where is my param dham? He says there, na tad bhasayate surya, the sun does not shine there. Surya, the sun, na bhasayate. Tad, there the sun does not shine. Na shashanka, the moon doesn't shine, and pavaka, the fire does not shine. So you mean it is a dark place, you can't see anything? There's no sun, there's no moon, there's no fire. So is that a dark, sad, sorrowful, shunya place? No, it's not. It is actually a place of great joy and love. So what he says, yad gatva na nivartante, once having gone there does not mean physically, it's not a place you have to go to, that's not after death you will go to some param dham. But when he means going there, what he means is having woken up to that higher reality, having realized the truth, having become one with that truth, na nivartante, such a person never comes back to this world of foolishness. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. What does he mean by never fall back? That Paramdham is my abode, Sri Krishna says. So why, as we said, words cannot describe this state. Even the Upanishads, even the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, none of them can describe that state, because it is a state that is beyond words. Just as a dream, from dream you go to a waking state. So from a waking, you wake up to that higher state of consciousness. It cannot be described, but in the Gita, in the Upanishads, in the scriptures, they make an attempt to tell us something about it so that we may have some idea of what it is. And then it points us in the direction. So when I sit for meditation, then I think about that higher state. So it says the sun, the moon, and the stars, and the fire do not illuminate. What do they mean by that? the sun and the moon and the fire cannot illuminate. There are many reasons to say that, and I have covered some of them. Because, like, there is a aarti, natatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam nema vidyuto bhanti kutoyam agnihi tameva bhantam anubhati sarvam tasya bhasa sarvam idam vibhati. So it's said that this world, the sun does not illumine, natatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam, either the moon nor the stars. Na ima vidyuto, even lightning does not illuminate. So how are this fire that I am showing to the Lord doing aarti, how can it reach that supreme? But why am I showing the fire to the Lord? Because tameva bhantam anubhati sarvam, it is his light, that light after which everything tasya bhasa sarvam idam vibhati. It is the Lord that illumines the sun, it is he who illumines the moon, the lightning, even this fire that is there. It is the Lord who is the one who is the illuminator. Then in the 13th chapter it says, Jyotisham api tad jyotihi tamasav param uchyate. So it is the light of all lights. Now when we think of light, we think of a powerful light, you know, that is shining. In fact, in the Gita, in the 11th chapter, he says, Divi Surya Sahasrasya Bhaved Yuga Padyotita. Just as 1,000 suns are arising, that's how he sees Lord Krishna's form. But here, when they use the word light, they don't use in the kind of light that we see, the light that is shining or a powerful 10,000 watt arc lamp that we see in the stadium. Here, when they talk about light, they talk about understanding, they talk about the light of knowledge. Like, I have a difficult math problem and I am not able to solve it. And then the teacher comes and explains it to me. Then I say, oh, I see. Now I can see. See does not mean that you could see the problem before, you could see it afterward. But when you understand, you say, I see. So seeing here is meant in the sense of understanding. So what they mean is that the light of knowledge, the light of consciousness is required to see the sun and the moon and the stars. Now, if the sun and the moon and the stars are in the sky, now if I am not conscious, if I am dead, or if I am, you know, under sedation, chloroform, or if I am unconscious, or if I am asleep, the sun could be shining brightly, I wouldn't see it. So unless the light of consciousness is functioning through my body and through my eyes, the sun and the moon and the stars won't be available to me. So that is why the sun and the moon and the stars can only be perceived by a conscious individual. So consciousness is required to see. That's number one. Secondly, the Lord is the one that has given energy to them, but they cannot illumine the Lord because the Lord is the one that has given the energy. The Lord is the creator. Another reason the sun and the moon and the stars cannot illuminate is because it is a different level of consciousness. As we said, there is a deep sleep, dream, waking, and then the higher state, which is called the Turiya. Like to give an example, say I'm living in a very cold climate, it's the dead of winter, and I wake up in the morning and it's dark and dreary, even though it's 6 or 7 in the morning, the sun has not risen, it's very cloudy and very cold. Now that night I dream that I am in the Bahamas, you know, or I am in Hawaii, and there's 80 degree weather, bright sunshine, and I'm enjoying that because I want to go there. I'm tired of the cold. Now when I wake up in the morning and I see dark and dreary, can I bring the sun from the dream and say, okay, let it illumine the waking state? No. In the dream I enjoyed the sunshine. I was lying on the beach and everything was beautiful. But that sun from the dream cannot be illumine the waking state, right? I cannot illumine my waking state by bringing. So similarly, the sun of this world, of this state called the waking state, cannot illumine that higher state of consciousness. The sun, the moon, the stars, the fire cannot travel. Just as from the dream, I cannot bring the sun to the waking state. So from the waking state, so it is a different level of consciousness. The other thing is, that say, he says, na jyotisham api tad jyotihi tamasav param uchyate. It says in the 13th chapter that suppose I am in a dark room and somebody asks me, are you there? You know, they don't see me. And you don't say, wait a minute, let me turn on the light to see whether I am in this room or not. I don't need to do that. I say, I am there. I know it, I am there. I don't need a light to see that where I am. Or somebody asks me, are you happy or unhappy? So wait a minute, let me shine the light to see if I am happy or unhappy. No, then I don't need a light to illumine my presence. I don't need a light to illumine my emotions or somebody else's emotions. You know, you don't need light. I mean, you can tell maybe from her expression or from their words, but light cannot illumine my presence. Light cannot illumine the emotions. So if light cannot illumine things of this world, how can it illumine that highest state of consciousness? So that's why it is said that it is a state which is beyond this world, but it is that because of which this whole world came into being. That's why it says it's an upside down tree, and the sun gets its light from the Lord, the moon gets its light, illumination, the ability, the stars, the fire. So the sun, everything gets its energy from the Lord, but they in turn cannot illumine him. Talking about sun and moon reminds me of a little story. There were these two men who were not very smart, and so they saw this round object in the sky. And so one said, it's the sun. Other one said, it's the full moon. Other one said, sun. It was around evening time, so they were not sure. So they kept fighting with each other. They were ready to come to blows. And they said, okay, let's not fight. Let's ask this third man. So this third man was walking. They said, sir, can you tell us whether it's the sun or the moon? You seem like a wise person. We are both arguing, it's the sun or the moon. He looks at it and says, how would I know? I don't even live here. I'm just a visitor. So main to bahar se aaya hoon. So the point is that this state that is beyond this world, beyond the sun and the moon, it is that because of which the sun gets its ability to heat, then it gives ability to the moon to shine. Even this electricity we have, okay, we created it, but the ability to create electricity, how it came from the fuel or how it came from the hydroelectric, everything is nature's laws. All we are doing is using nature's laws to create electricity, to create light. So everything that we see is that state, but it cannot affect that state. It cannot illumine that state. It is because it is a different state of consciousness. Is that clear, right? It is a higher state. It is a state that is beyond anything that we can experience. So then they say, how do we know it? So they say, how do you know it? Because you are, all of us are actually that divinity. All of us are that Om, that consciousness, who at this moment is using the body to perceive the objects, to mind, to feel the emotions, the intellect, to think the thoughts, and the vasanas are propelling us. But our true nature is that. We, all of us, are a little spark of that, which he will say in the next verse. We are a little spark, we are a little light, we are a little part of that totality. So just understand that, wake up to that, and as you reduce your ego, as you reduce your vasanas, your selfish desires, slowly, slowly, you come to experience the Lord's presence within, and then ultimately you realize that the Lord and I are one. So that is the process of growing up. And so this kind of words help us to understand that this state is something that is desirable. Yad gatva na nivartante. Having gone there, you never fall back. And Gurudev in his commentary very beautifully says that suppose a person is a great singer, you know, he has learned to sing beautifully, he's a very top classical singer. Now you ask him to sing out of tune and a bad song, he can't. He's so evolved. I mean, you tell him to sing out of tune and sing a bad, he cannot, because he's so evolved. Or a person who's very literate, you know, has a PhD in English and has written a lot of books. You tell him, can you write a sentence in bad grammar? He's not going to write it. Because he's already evolved, you know, once he's gone to that. In fact, if he sees somebody else writing bad grammar or a musician seeing somebody else singing a bad note, it will bother them. You know, this is not right. So similarly, an evolved person, just in this world itself, somebody who is evolved cannot go back to his state of ignorance. You cannot tell him, okay, now you are a PhD in English, now you need to go back to kindergarten and study ABCD. He doesn't need to. He already did that 20 years ago. So similarly, a person who is evolved to that higher state of consciousness, once he is a realized master, then does not get caught up in this world, does not fall back, means does not go back to his ignorant state. You and I are still ignorant of that supreme state. We have heard about it from Sri Krishna. We have heard from Gurudev and all the acharyas. But we don't have the experience. But somebody like Gurudev, Swami Chinmayananda, who has experienced that state, then no longer falls back to his old state of ignorance. In fact, he then becomes a guide or a teacher, just as a PhD in English will teach others, you know, how to write good English, how to speak, or a great musician will teach other musicians how to, you know, how to compose music. So a great master, out of love and compassion for us, they have composed all these Gita and the Bible and the Quran and all these commentaries that have been written, have been done by these great masters because they have sympathy and compassion for us, and they want us also to evolve to them, just as a musician wants. He'll be very happy when his disciple reaches to his level or surpasses him. So similarly, the masters want us to come to their level, to even go beyond them. So that is the purpose of this whole teaching. He says, Yad gatva na nivartante tadham paramam mama. That is my supreme abode. That is where I reside, and that is where this, that is the goal of every human being. And so Sri Krishna is very clearly telling us the goal so that we may also go in that direction. And these are all guideposts in meditation. In fact, certain schools of meditation talk about, okay, when you reach a certain step, you will hear some sounds and then you will see a blue light. You know that, I'm sure I have not seen any light or heard any sounds, but some people say they do, and you know, if that is what they're looking for. But we should not understand light as just light as illumination, but light as understanding. So in meditation, I have to understand who I am. Not in my meditation, I should be looking for light. Okay, you know, whether if a light came, then a light went away, and people come and say, you know, Swamiji, I am realized. He says, why? He says, you know, I was sitting, then this powerful light came and stood in front of me and it went away. That's not, that may be a signpost, but that does not mean you're realized. Because if that was the permanent truth, it should not go away. If a light came and went away, then that is not the ultimate. Because the ultimate goal, once you reach, you never lose it. So that is the purpose of this verse. I hope I have been able to clarify that. It's kind of a difficult verse. But any questions, any comments anybody has? See, I think all those techniques are done to quieten the mind. The mind, which is running all over, you make it focus on something very pleasant, like a sunrise or a sunset or an ocean scene and all. And then when the mind has become focused on that and has become very quiet and peaceful, then you even drop that support. And ultimately, the goal of meditation is to understand who am I. And that is the final meditation, is to understand that I am that. I am that supreme reality. I am that Om, that is my true nature. And to own it, first you listen to it, then you contemplate upon it, and then you abide in that knowledge. And you constantly understand that I am that reality. This body is not who I am. Even Swamiji, this whole last 3 days, was telling us about it, that in the Ashtavakra Gita, that you are not this body. This body is an equipment, is an instrument that you are using to function, but your true goal is spiritual, true. Body is just something you use to evolve, to go towards the Lord. So that is the ultimate. Whether you meditate on a light or on a scene or even on a form of God, you think of Krishna or you think of Jesus. But ultimately, the mind has to become still. And in that still mind, the thought you drop in there that I am not this body, I am not the mind. But I am that supreme state, supreme self. I am Om. That is. So all those are guideposts. Those are helpful things, but they are not the ultimate. The ultimate meditation is I am that. And that only not only should be done in meditation, but should become a part of your life. Just if I ask you, are you a human being or an animal? You don't say, wait a minute, let me look in the mirror. You know, no, you know I am a human, I am a man, I am a woman. You don't need to think about it. So a wise person, if you ask him who you are, he might give you his name, but he knows I am that reality. They don't need to think about it. They don't need to, because it becomes firmly established. So that is the final goal of meditation, to establish in that truth. With the music and all, yeah. See, those are all aids that you, like even the beginning, when I started meditation, I used to have this Gayatri mantra. I used to just play it 108 times. Om Bhurbhuvah Svah. So I needed that to, because my mind used to run so much. And everywhere, even when I travel, I used to carry my little tape recorder and, you know, play it in the morning. And after a while, it becomes a burden. You don't need it if you can quieten your mind without the mantra. So using the music or the imagery or the mantra or sound or all those are aids in meditation, but ultimately you have to drop them all and abide in that truth. So these are all preliminary steps. I'm not discounting them, and they are useful in the early stages of meditation. You need help. Maybe you need a CD player or a tape recorder, or you need a picture or an image of God. You know, you can contemplate upon it, but ultimately you have to go within. Everything outside has to be dropped. You have to discover it within. Actually, there is a very beautiful song I heard. It's a very, very old song. Those who listen to Hindi music, it's a Pankaj Malik song from 1952. Absolute Vedanta. Everybody should listen to that. It's called Tu Dhoondta Hai Jisko. Just go to Dhoondta Hai Jisko. Go on YouTube. Beautiful song by Pankaj Malik. Absolute Vedanta. I actually downloaded it. I even sent it to Anamika and, you know, a couple of people. But beautiful song, where it says that the one you are searching for in the forest, in the village, in the oceans, in the mountains, Samvara Salona, that Krishna resides in your heart. Rehta hai tere man mein. He's in your heart. Look for him there. I mean, he is there. Of course, he's in the temple. He's in the, you know, church. He's in the mosque. He's in the mountains. He's in the sky. He's in the flowers, but he's within you. So find him the closest where he is. Why do you have to search all over? He is everywhere. He's there in every cell of every human being. He's there, but the closest is in your heart. Beautiful. Tu Dhoondta Hai Jisko. Everybody should listen to that song. It's a very old song, but very, very nice. It's a Pankaj Malik, 1952. My mother just happened to mention it, so I just found it. It's very, very nice. But that's what it basically says. Find him within. So all these other things are helpful. If you see a beautiful flower, you see a sunrise, you see the birds chirping, you know, yeah, that reminds you of the Lord, but ultimately you have to discover him within. So if they ask you what is the technique, it tells them, tell them that it takes you within. We take you within to where the God resides, where the truth is. Yeah, mindful is that you mind which is running all over, you bring it to where what you are doing. They say put your mind, Gurudev says, put your mind where your hands are. So if you're eating, your attention should be on eating. Your attention should not be on watching TV or reading the newspaper. When you're talking to some person, your attention should be on her, not on your cell phone. I'm sure wives can vouch for that. It happens all the time. We also do it. Yeah. You know, four people are on a dinner table. Each one is talking to somebody far away. Yeah. And they're not even talking to the person on the table next to them. It's so interesting. You know, they're chatting with somebody who is 5 miles or 10 miles away. And this living person in front, we don't talk. We spend more time with the phone. Yeah. That's why somebody, there was this lady who told who found a lamp, and he asked the genie, genie said, I can give you one wish. She found an old lamp and rubbed it, and genie said, I can give you one wish. So she says, you know what, I want you to make me such that my husband only has eyes for me, takes me wherever he goes. First thing he wakes up in the morning, he holds me, and I'm the last thing he sees at night. So genie says, okay, I'll make you into a Samsung Galaxy. That's the only way he'll take you with him everywhere. So that's what it is. Right, yeah, going within, go to the pranas, because the breath is the closest to the truth. It connects you to the, yeah. The breath and the mind are both, you know, connected through the Hatha Yoga, yes. Yeah, so it's the same thing. All these techniques are required to quieten the mind, and in that quiet mind, you then contemplate on who you are. And that is the final goal of meditation. Thank you. That's a good question. Yeah.
I have another question. Jiva and ego, they are the same.
The ego, yeah, jiva is the, yeah, ego is the perceiver, feeler and thinker. Jiva is the individuality. It is the same. Yes. It is the individuality, which is the packet of the mind, intellect and vasanas. So it is the individuality, the ego. Yes. The jiva. Yes. Yeah. Then the person functions, but is no longer functioning as a jiva. He becomes the spirit, he becomes a prophet, he becomes a mahatma, he becomes a saint, because the ego is what separates me from her and her and separates me from God. But when the ego is lessened, ego does not mean that the person becomes useless. In fact, he becomes more powerful, because instead of working as an individual, he becomes a servant of God, he becomes an instrument of God. So he actually becomes a saint or a prophet, because yeah, the individual can exist without the ego, yes. The goal is to lessen the ego, yes. The ego is the sense of individuality, that I am separate from everybody else. But in reality, we are all one, because we are all that Supreme Self. We are all that one consciousness, appearing in different forms with different names. Just as all pots are nothing but mud, all ornaments are nothing but gold, all waves are nothing but ocean. So we are all nothing but that supreme reality, appearing in different names and forms. Just as pots may be different shape and color, but they are all nothing but mud. So one has to constantly tell ourselves that I am that reality and everybody else is that reality. We are all that one.